Sure Thing today. It is April 26th. Warren and Ryan here with you on today's program. We will have NBA playoffs talk. We will have NFL draft props and maybe some MLB futures that we missed to give out as we take a look at the board there. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the iHeartRadio app as well. We'll be back next week, obviously, as well. Brian, how's it going out there?
It's going good, man. Had a good weekend, full of baseball, all that good stuff. You know, the usual for this time of year. Got to watch plenty of playoff basketball. Gotta say, I think I'm a little too old for the 8:30, 9 o'clock tips, man. Those are really kicking my butt. But you know, we're trying to do the best we can and power through it.
Oh, I'm a first half of those, and see you later.
It's just tough because like the Suns, that's where where the Suns all play. I mean, they have the late tip every single night. And, you know, last night the Mavs have the late tip. And so, you know, it's beating your boy down a little bit.
Even even when they play in, New Orleans, they're getting the 8:30 start.
Yeah, I know.
That's like, you gotta get the, you almost hoping you're on NBA TV so you can maybe get a 7 p.m. start or something.
Yeah.
The Mavs on Thursday tip off at 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. I might get a quarter and a half into that.
Yeah. Well, it's a draft too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at least last night's game was a blow. We'll get into that in a little bit. But, first, I watched this last week or 2 weeks ago. I meant to say, have you watched the Tony Hawk documentary yet?
I have not.
Highly recommend.
What's it on?
HBO Max.
Okay.
I think it's like 2 hours, hour and 45, something like that. Very good. Highly recommend it to anybody out there. Lots of stuff that you don't, and it's like, we're all in the age of like sports documentaries. Like we have the Jordan, the Brady, I guess Jeter's having one. Magic Johnson has one. Here's the thing about, you either Tiger, like there was the one of Tiger, but he wasn't in it. The thing is like, if the people are going to be in it, they obviously want editorial control over it and not the stuff that they don't, that doesn't make them look great in it. I'll say Tony Hawk, I assume he helped produce this one. They interviewed him a ton. There was a lot of stuff that was like, wouldn't say was the most flattering stuff about Tony Hawk in there, but at the end you came out liking him even more, but it's just a fascinating story. And I thought that was like a great, great one. I think we're at a part of sports documentaries where it's a bit oversaturated, or the people that the documentary is about are having too much editorial say.
Yeah. 'Cause then obviously, you know, you get a skewed sense of what facts were and things like that. I know there's a Nolan Ryan one coming out. I don't know how much he's involved in that, but you know, I get what you say. You know, you don't feel like you get the full story.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of, like The Last Dance was great, but how much other stuff would have been in there if Jordan wasn't involved in it? Like yeah, unflattering about him. Probably a lot of stuff.
Oh, a ton. Yeah, probably would have been half as good as it actually was.
And like, did you ever watch the Tiger one?
Oh yeah,
on HBO.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if Tiger was a editor in that. How different would that look?
Yeah, it would be a completely different story.
Yes, it would be a completely different story. All the good stuff in there. Yeah, the Tony Hawk one, I would highly recommend it. I thought it was very, it was very, very good there. Yeah. All right, let's get a little playoffs before the draft here. Last night, Mavs blow out the Jazz, which I was not surprised about. I took the alt line -9, a little +200 there, so that was good. The Jazz also. I saw Rome 3 of 30 from three. I mean, it wasn't like the Mavs could make a three, but the Jazz in the first half, they had to miss what? 12 open three-pointers in a row. I thought Romo was going to trot out there and hoist some threes up for the Jazz and give them a little help out there.
Give them a shot.
But they just couldn't make a bucket last night. The Mavs looked pretty good. They did enough. Luka's looked great since he came back in game four. He looked good last night as well. You know who my most disappointing player so far of the series is for the Mavericks?
Who's that?
Spencer Dinwiddie. He
really?
Just, yeah, I think offensively he's been pretty bad. Now he's doing defensively. He's been fine. I mean, I guess he had.
He had a good game, game one, I believe.
Wow, he's scored 20, the first three games of the series, he's won 22, 17, and 20 points wise. I just thought he was playing worse. Maybe he's just a lot of volume shots. Just seems like he was struggling a lot from the field early on, but I guess the eyes in the box score aren't matching up on that.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously Jalen Brunson did the bulk of the carrying, for the Mavs while Luka was out. But I felt like Dinwiddie was right there with him, you know, in helping shoulder the load a little bit with the scoring and things like that. So that's why I was a little shocked when you said that.
Maybe it's just like a volume of a scoring thing. I'm gonna look it up here. I mean, he was 6 of 15. Game one, he was 6 of 15. He went to the line 16 times. Game two, let's take a look at game two. What was he game two? Game two, he was 6 of 18. So maybe it's just an efficiency thing that was, throwing me off there. Game three, he was 6 of 21. So, okay. I'm not wrong on saying that I guess I thought he would shoot the ball better. He's just a lot of volume. Efficiency numbers are down. That's why it's like that. So the eyes aren't off there, but do you think this game comes back to Dallas, the series comes back to Dallas for game seven?
The way last night went, no. I think everybody from the top down on Utah has checked out. You know, coaching staff, players, bench players, you know, everything that you hear about this team is how they really don't like each other. Mainly they just really don't like, nobody likes Rudy Gobert. And how they all just kind of need a reset, and this team's going to look totally different because, you know, you've seen this iteration for what, 3-4 years now, and they just can't seem to push it over the edge and, you know, make any sort of run. So I think this is all but wrapped up for, the Mavs, and, you know, I think they finish it off in Utah.
I thought if they would have checked out, they would have just punted on game four. Like, they wouldn't have came back. I know they got out to a big lead, but the Mavs shot the ball terrible on Saturday afternoon. And all the quote unquote momentum was with the Mavs in the second half, and they were able to squeak one out there to force it up. So I think the Jazz are going to have some fight with them. I wouldn't be shocked if they sent it back to a game seven. I don't think the Jazz are going to win the series. Mm-hmm. The Mavs have clearly been the better team with Luka and without Luka in this series, but I don't know. I think there's going to be some. I know. I saw Donovan Mitchell hurt his hamstring, but he said it'll be good for Game Six. A little tight there, but I think they'll show some fight on Thursday night. I think they could squeak one out there, but I don't think they're gonna. I think the Mavs win the series. That's for sure. Yesterday, I was looking at the series price. We talked about last week that the Mavs are +200 to win the series when it was 1-1. We should have jumped on that probably. But yesterday before the game, it was minus 150 to win the series. So they went from, almost a 2-1 underdog to now a decent sized favorite to advance. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing too about last night was that Dwight Powell getting a little more run yesterday, which this also probably just is that Luka's coming back, that they're going to play Dwight Powell more because he's much better in the pick and roll. He's pretty much, hey, Luka's playing. We're going to play Dwight Powell when he's not. You saw how ineffective he was in games two and three. Then they also went small because they're like, hey, we got to space out, get shooters out there. And he's not really a 3-point guy. So Luka's in there. They get the pick and roll going, and Dwight Powell's role has elevated just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a big Dwight Powell guy. I know he, you know, as of late, well, I mean, shoot, almost all season, he kind of fell out of favor with the coaching staff, but I just think he's a guy that does, you know, the old cliche, does a lot of stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet, where, you know, a lot of hustle plays, a lot of chase down rebounds, diving for balls, you know, saving balls, falling out of bounds. I've always been a big Dwight Powell guy, so anytime he gets a little bit of extra run, I'm always, you know, happy to see it for him.
And also, there was a nice couple of games from Josh Green there in the middle of the series. He was pretty, it's been a lot of like, oh man, Desmond Bane could have had him, could have had, Sadiq Bey, but we got Josh Green, this and that. He looked pretty good. He looked good in games 2, 3, and 4. So good for him for finally getting some minutes out there and show after a tough game 1, I think it was. He had a horrible game earlier in the series and he comes back and has a good response in the next couple of games there. So that's what you want to see from your young guys.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Elsewhere in the playoffs, the slander machine should be up and running, but I guess I'm missing it. The Nets get swept. And, obviously things did not go well for the Nets this year as they barely had anybody play. They had the whole Kyrie fiasco. They had, the Durant get hurt. Harden didn't want to be there anymore. So he's out. They get Simmons. He's going to play. He doesn't play. All this stuff. They get surprisingly swept by the Celtics and all the games were decided within a couple possessions. You know, they lost the buzzer beater game 1. They blew game 2 a lead. But I'll tell you what. It, to me, looked like in game 3, pretty much the whole series, that Durant just did not want to be on the court. Like, he was – I know the Boston defense was really good, and they were definitely agitating, and it probably part of the reason why Durant was struggling. But Durant was horrific this entire series. Like, he was really, really bad.
He was probably as bad as we've seen him in his career. Usually if he's out there, whether he's banged up or dinged up or anything, he still puts out a pretty good effort and hits some shots. But we just saw him shoot at an abysmal clip that we've never seen him shoot at before, which was, a big part of why the Nets weren't able to, get the job done. Game 1, you're like, okay, they lose by a buzzer beater, close game, good game. You know, this series could, has the ability to maybe go 6 or 7. Either way, and it could go either way. And then both KD and Kyrie just could not find the bottom of the net and couldn't fill it up the way they needed to. And, you know, when your two best players obviously aren't making buckets, it's going to be real tough to win, especially against a good team like Boston. And Boston defensively was really good too. Not just with Jason Tatum and the usual suspects of them scoring, but defensively that team was really, really good on the Nets. And, like you said, it was a performance from KD that we just haven't seen him, have yet. And, I think that was ultimately the biggest issue was just KD. I don't even think Kyrie making buckets, but KD not making buckets was, problem number 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. It was Durant, because Kyrie had a great game 1. Kyrie was terrible, or Durant was terrible in that game 1, and he was never effective. Like, he couldn't, the Boston defense on his mid-range game was fantastic. Like, that was, they were definitely in his grill, and I just feel like, he was just like, if we're not going to win game 2, we'll try, but they're heading to Cancun after that. He was kind of fed up with the whole thing, like, whatever, all that stuff with the Nets, and I love Kyrie. I was disappointed the Nets didn't give it a better series, because after game 1, we thought we were going to have a classic here, and it just didn't. I mean, most of the games were still pretty good, it just didn't materialize.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's funny that, like, oh, people go slander the Nets. But what are we, like, the hatred for the Nets, I don't know if it's really hatred or it's just fun to make fun of, but, like, I understand why Boston fans don't like Kyrie, so they get one over. But, I mean, he made a personal decision not to play. They said they wanted a super team. They traded James Harden. He wasn't out there. Like, what else is there to make fun of? Like, Kyrie said it's going to be a decision between him, Kevin Durant, Sean Marks, and the owner. Like, this is a group effort. I don't know, Kyrie. Guess what? The way your group effort's going right now, it got you swept in the playoffs. Probably not the best way to go there.
Yeah, 100%.
And they have, like, they were without Joe Harris, which is a big deal. I also thought before in the series, before last night, like, Seth Curry was pretty ineffective. And he's a guy, you saw it last night, he played great last night. Like, how, you got to find a way to get him the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they did.
Think he, what did we say the other day? He's like fourth all time in 3-point percentage, 3-point shooting percentage.
Probably.
Got to get the ball to that guy.
Yeah. Got to get the ball to that guy. And one thing on Boston, I'll tell you this. If this was a Brad Stevens coach team, they would have lost the series. This is the coach Brad Stevens, this is a tough look for him. A tough look for Coach Brad Stevens.
Why?
Why? Look at what Ime Udoka did. Look at what he got out of this team. It's practically the same team that Brad Stevens coached for like 4 years. Look at what he's turned Jason Tatum into. Jason Tatum's playing like what, a top five player in the league right now?
Mm-hmm.
He's basically unstoppable out there. Look at what he's untapped on the defense. They got the number one defensive team out there. He had these guys. He couldn't do anything with them. And look at what he's doing after January, the new coach. This is a tough look for everybody that would say they would take Brad Stevens over any player in the NBA a couple years back.
Okay. I mean, I know you like to try to trash Brad Stevens any chance you get, so I'll just let you do your thing there.
What? No, you could do a rebuttal.
I mean, I don't have one. Yeah. I mean, look, Jason Tatum played really, really well. He played about as good as he can. And about as good as we've seen him. I don't know how much of it is, you know, how much of it is the coaching and how much of it is just the Celtics are that good. And you could say, well, one has to precede the other. So, you know what I mean? I think Brad Stevens was a good coach. I think he was a good coach in the sense of X's and O's. I think in maybe in-game decisions and maybe getting guys up to get ready to go, maybe lacked a little bit there. But, you know, like I said, I know you're a big anti-Brad Stevens guy. So, I'm going to let you do your thing and lay out on this one.
It's just a thing of, again, saying he's like the greatest thing in the world since sliced bread. I would rather have him than any player in the league. All these people talking about this yada, 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 yada. And the guy never made a finals. Do it when it counts.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. We always heard about how great these Boston teams were, and he always underperformed with them. And now we're seeing the potential of the Boston team, and it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where my main thing is. It's mainly more directed at the media that just oohed and ahed and oozed and just gargled Brad Stevens for 4 or 5 years. and he was too tired of coaching. So he went to do a front office job, and I'm too tired. I don't want to do this anymore. It's not cut out for me when he had a tough season last year. All right. See ya, buddy. Go kiss Tyronn Lue's rings. As he did a masterclass on him in Game 7 with Jeff Green as the number 2 guy. All right, enough of that. What else do we have in the playoffs?
Doc Rivers might choke it away again?
I was just going to say that. Is the slander machine coming up with Doc Rivers again?
I mean, shoot, it kind of looks that way. I mean, and this one's tough because, look, I mean, they were up what? 3-0 on Toronto, and now they're going back for a game 6. If you're the Sixers, you got to close this one out. But on the same hand, no pun intended, Joel Embiid just doesn't have a thumb. Like, he can't use his thumb at all. You know, he hit a game winner with it. And that's the other thing too. I mean, if that ball bounces out and he doesn't hit that game winner, they go to overtime. Maybe they lose that game anyway. So it's really, you know, you're in a spot that's, you might, you know, again, you know, obviously butterfly effect or sliding doors effect where he doesn't hit that shot and maybe you're looking at a 2-2 series or, you know, whatever instead of 3-1. So I get it. It's bad optics for Doc Rivers because of how, you know, his playoff record has gone ever since he won the championship in Boston. But, yeah, you're definitely puckered a little bit if you're docking those Sixers in that locker room, because, like, shoot, man, we can't blow a 3-0 lead to a Toronto team with, what, Fred VanVleet is their best player right now?
And he didn't play last night.
Exactly. And so it's, things are definitely, the take machine is definitely churning, waiting for Doc Rivers to blow a 3-0 lead.
Well, it also should be on James Harden. So, okay, so you get Harden. Embiid's got the bum thumb, fine. I don't think anybody's really going to clown Embiid on this. He's out there trying. Credit to him for out there trying to play with a bad thumb. But this is when Harden is supposed to step up and be the superstar that everybody thinks he is.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you get two stars. One guy gets hurt. He's trying out there to play. The other guy, time to step up. Good thing the game was on NBA TV last night because I don't think anybody was watching. But James Harden, I'm going to need more than 11 field goal attempts from you last night at home. Okay? I'm going to need a little bit more than that. You played 40 minutes. I'm going to need more out of you than a 15-7 performance.
100%.
Like, dude, we all know that you are a choke artist, but maybe you could change a little bit of your perception right here, right now. And it is just not happening. Mm-hmm. I think this is Embiid. He should get a pass, as you said, because he's injured. This is going to be on Harden and I would say on Doc and it's looking that way there. What else we got? The Suns are in a good old slobber knocker here.
Yeah, I mean, credit to New Orleans. New Orleans is playing really, really well. CJ McCollum's been playing well. They're getting a lot from Jackson Hayes. They're getting a lot from a lot of their guys. And so they're playing well. Obviously, when you don't have your best shooter, your best scorer on the team, as the Suns don't, you know, your offense is going to stutter a little bit. Chris Paul's done a really good job kind of handling the load of his usual – you know, spreading the ball around, but also taking over and scoring when he needs to. I mean, he put on a masterclass the other night in the fourth quarter where he was bullying guys to get to the elbow and then was just knocking down every single shot from, you know, 15 feet in. And it was just like you said, it was incredible. It was impressive to watch because you knew every time he had the ball and he was coming down the court, you knew exactly what he was going to do. And he was still able to convert and do it every single time. So credit to him for being able to shoulder the load and keep this, you know, competitive. You know, I am a little worried if I'm going to be completely honest. But, you know, at the end of the day, I still think the Suns will and should get it done. Like I said, credit to the Pelicans for keeping it competitive and making it an interesting series.
The series is getting chippy too.
Oh yeah.
Big time. Running two-handed shove to Jay Crowder by Jackson Hayes was pretty funny.
It was a crackback. It was a crackback block. It was a textbook crackback. He was looking the other way and Jackson Hayes just came up and just, you know, laid the wood on him and sprung the running back free for another 15, 20 yards.
And then the look of shock on Jackson Hayes' face was quite funny when he got a flagrant two. What? Buddy, come on. And then who was he in the scrap with Chris Paul again, Sunday night?
He was a part of it. Yes. Yeah. He definitely was a part of it.
But that seemed a little initiated by Chris Paul. Like he threw the first.
Yeah.
He threw the first kind of arm out there, but then I think Jackson Hayes did a little bit more on, of the extracurriculars there right in front of the ref and nothing. All right. Go at it, boys. Mm-hmm. But no, the Suns should beat this team. What did they go 36 and 46 in the regular season?
But they're playing way better than they were during the
regular season. No, they are. No. They also got out to what, a 1-12 start. Mm-hmm. So, and they've been playing much better than when CJ has the trade. But still, yeah, this is a team that I think that they should beat there. We have the Warriors. They're going to wrap that up whenever they play next. I think tonight or tomorrow. The Grizzlies.
Your boy Carl. I mean, look, it's just amazing that after he has just a stellar performance that we never record right after. It's just an amazing.
He had a great game four.
Great game four? He had an okay game four.
He had 30 and something.
Another abysmal game three when you're still the team's best player. And
I never said he was the best player. You said he wouldn't take him in the top 100 of a redraft of the NBA. That is crazy.
No, I stand by it.
Well, that's what I'm arguing about Karl Anthony Towns. He would clearly get drafted. He'd probably get drafted in the top 20, top 25.
By Brad Stevens.
But then, hey, Brad Stevens, the executive. I have no ill will towards just the coach, Brad Stevens. So here's the thing. Towns, expect him to have a horrible game tonight. He's pretty much bad game, good game, bad game, good game, bad game. He had a good game the other night. Expect a holler tonight from him.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, he's considered that series it's quite entertaining.
Yeah.
Quite entertaining. And then, what else we got there? The Bulls, they're cooked. Tough to get beat by Grayson Allen in a couple of games, especially you think you get a chance with, Middleton out there. What's the other West series? I'm missing one, am I?
The Nuggets.
No, I said the Warriors are closing that out tonight.
We hit on all of them then.
The Heat, they're gonna cruise through. Yeah, I guess we did hit on all of them. there have been some good games so far. The playoffs have been good. I will say that. The playoffs have been good. The East, it seems like the best teams are taking care of business early. Well, we thought that. I thought Philly would win last night. But the West, that seems where the series could go a little bit deeper in there. All right, NFL draft. Are you coming with – you have props ready to go?
No. I'll be honest with you. I think because of where Washington lines up for the draft, like last season, I was like, I think it's a combination of a few things. Because they come off a nice little run and, you know, with Taylor Heineke, you're like, okay, maybe this team is just a player or two away. You're a little bit more hyped up and then things go terrible this season. It's like, well, obviously we're more than just a player away. So it really doesn't matter who, and this draft isn't super loaded with a lot of talent. It's got a lot of wide receiver talent, and I think that's what Washington should go after. But I got to be honest, I have not been super locked into the draft like I have been maybe the last 3 or 4 years getting ready for. You know, usually I'd be doing 7-round mock drafts on PFF over and over and over again. I have not done that this season, so we'll fly by the seat of our pants and just kind of follow your lead here.
I'm surprised you got like what are you picking 11th?
Yes.
That should be prime in the draft season.
No, I know, but that's the thing. That's the thing I'm saying. It's like the I know we're going to get a good player there. I honestly would rather trade back. I'm a big trade back guy when you're like top 15, you know, and the draft isn't super deep like it is here. Like, I feel like we could probably have a good shot at Garrett Wilson or Olave around 16 or 17. So have a good shot of maybe even 20, 21 of getting either of those guys. You know, so maybe get a little extra draft capital and move back a little bit. So I get what you're saying. You know, we are primed for a good pick, but I just think that the value might not be there. And I hate being a value guy in the draft. Just draft the best player that's there. But I hate being a value guy. But if there's value elsewhere, or there's value, you know, a couple picks later, why not try to pick it up?
No, that's not a terrible point. My draft thing has been non-existent until yesterday and today when I've been scouring the prop scene.
Mm.
I mean, with no first round pick, what do? You don't do anything.
Yeah.
There's
That's
nothing.
The worst. That's the worst.
I mean, it's so especially the worst because the draft was the Browns Super Bowl for my entire life. You know, you don't even have a first round pick.
Yeah.
We'd have 2 first round picks. It'd be great. We'd get this guy, this and that, blah, 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 this and that. But, this is what it's going to be like, I guess, for the next, 3 years. I think they traded 3 first rounders. Hey. You know what? That's fine. If they win, I'd rather have that than have to worry about the draft. But I've been checking out the, a lot of buzz. Now, I don't know what's fake, what's real, what's fake going on here, but I've got some props we're going to take. I'll tell you what, if you want to dive into, like last year, who won number one last year?
It's Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, that's right. Last year was pretty, obviously he was the consensus, but it seemed like the draft order last year, like 4 or 5, whatever, the top 4, it was pretty easy who was going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
This year, who knows what's going to happen, even with the number 1 pick, seems like this guy, Trayvon Walker, he's the consensus now, but who knows, it seems like we might have
Which
a little
wild. He's been like in like between like 5 to 8 all season long, well, you know, all draft season long. And now all of a sudden he's the consensus number one. So obviously somebody tipped their hand over in Jacksonville, I think, of where they're going to go. And that's how this word got out.
But also I heard like the Trent Baalke likes Trayvon Walker. Shad Khan, the owner, likes Aiden Hutchinson. And the coach is Doug Peterson's their coach. He wants to tackle Ikem Nkakwu. So we're going to have a little office 3-person standoff going on right here. Who's going to put the guns down first? But I also think the thing that we have going on with Trayvon Walker is that NFL people have been high on this guy the entire season, draft season, and now the mockers are getting into it that, oh, this is – they're starting to hear talk. Like, now this is the guy that they're – he's not rising in the – they always say the risers. This guy wasn't a riser. These people just weren't doing their jobs right or they weren't figuring it out.
Yeah.
But, there are some good good odds all throughout the board. Like the number third overall pick, if you want to figure out who's doing that, that's Houston. The best odds are plus 300. Like if you can get some intel, you can get some, serious, you can make some serious money here, but I'm just been taking a look at some things that I saw or have heard, yesterday. Kayvon Thibodeau, he's from Oregon. Right now his over under getting drafted is, over 4.5. It's plus 125. I'm going to take the over on that. He's not going to go in the top four. The top four this year is the Jags, Lions, Houston, and the Jets. Mike Garofolo, I would say, he thinks that Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be on the slide. I saw a couple other people say that they think he's going to be the guy that slides this year. So I'm going to go with those guys and take him over a 4.5. At plus 120.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that a lot. I think, you know, as of late, a lot of the knocks on him is that he doesn't quite, you know, maybe love football the way guys you want guys to. And you know, any fan that thinks that every guy in the NFL loves playing football, you're sorely, sorely mistaken. But there is, you know, a certain type of guy that can get up and go and, you know, and get you a little extra, you know, some of those hustle plays or whatever. And I guess the big knock on him is that that's not always there. And the motor isn't always there to want to try to compete and win. So I definitely see him sliding down to probably fifth or sixth, maybe even seventh. And so I agree with that wholeheartedly. I don't know what book you're using. I just pulled up the DraftKings one because it's on my phone. The over 4.5, they have him at plus 200.
Really? This is the Bovada.
Yeah.
Plus 200, even better.
Yeah.
I bet, yeah, Bovada always has like the worst odds, I think. But that's because they know most people will use it and they're not in a legal, state. The other guy that's been getting a lot of hype I've been seeing the Jets is this Jermaine Johnson guy. I guess he went to Virginia Tech, I think. He's an edge guy. Hmm. They think that the Jets really like him at number four. He's plus 500 if that tickles the fancy. I'm not ready to pull the trigger on that yet. Not ready to do that. But that could be there. I'm reading through here. Todd McShay's got his little guys with some buzz right now. This one was surprising to me. This is about Seattle at number 9. Seattle does some weird stuff in the draft. We all agree. They took who was the dude out of West? Bruce Irvin they took. They've taken some weird guys out there. They're not very good at drafting. But McSay said he's hearing a lot of noise that the Seahawks are taking a hard look at Jordan Davis. He's the guy that's like 350 pounds from Georgia, the defensive tackle.
Yeah, and runs like a 4.5.
Yes. So I pulled up his odds, see what DraftKings has for him. But Jordan Davis right now to be the number 9th overall pick is plus 2,400. That might not be a bad shot in the dark there. If there's some buzz there.
So DraftKings has him set his draft position at 15.5. Under is minus 140, over is plus 110.
Do they have like specific number overall pick, like what odds for that or not?
No, they don't.
Okay, that's what Bovada has. Like you could draft on the number, the overall, like at number 9, who's drafted in this slot. And
oh, you know what? Let's see. Actually, yeah, they do. I just didn't scroll. Okay. So let me look here at number 9.
Number 9. See if it goes that far.
Jordan Davis, they have him at plus 1,000.
Okay. So that's a better number here. Plus 2,400.
Yeah.
I think that might be something to sprinkle a little bit on. Anytime you get a little 10-1. I like that. I like that. The one I do, this is a team, what they're going to take with their first position drafted. I think I hinted at this last week. And this is just, you're hoping and praying this guy's here. The Cowboys are taking Treylon Burks if he's around at 24. You cannot convince me otherwise. Just the Arkansas thing with Jerry. He took Felix Jones in the first round, Arkansas running back. This just brings up deja vu of that. So for the Cowboys to take a wide receiver with their first position drafted, that's plus 350. You gotta hope Treylon Burks falls to number 24. And if he's there, I'm I saw Dane Brugler, who's close to the Cowboys, says it's either Burks or a lineman. And I'm telling you, I think Jerry's going to be like, we're taking it. He's going to overrule here, and he's going to take Burks.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. I think that's a good call. You know, for all the reasons given, like you said, but this will be what, the second wide receiver in 3 years they take in the draft in the first round?
Yeah.
Right?
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, I think he does too. I think he pulls out the iron fist and hammers it down, but, no, I would agree with you. I think if he's there and he's available, that's exactly who they're going to try to snatch up.
I mean, they do need a receiver, but I would probably say an offensive lineman is more valuable than that, than a wide receiver right now.
Yeah.
All right. We have other guys. I'm kind of fascinated on, what's going to happen with these quarterbacks here. Who's going to be the first one to bite on the quarterbacks?
Well, so Malik Willis, I think, is going to be the first one drafted. Looking at his draft position, they have it set at 12 and a half. I have seen and heard a couple guys, I think Tom McShay being one of them, saying that he wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting at pick 16, 17, maybe even 20, and the first quarterback goes off the board there. You know what I mean? So not even a top 10, top 15 quarterback. A lot of it has to do with a lot of guys feel like Kenny Pickett is a good quarterback. He can come in, he can start you games or win ball games now. And he's going to have, I've seen a lot of comparison to like an Alex Smith or Ryan Tannehill, where he'll win you some ball games. He'll have a nice long 10, 12 year career. The floor is high, but the ceiling is low. Whereas you're getting the opposite from Malik Willis, where you're getting the athleticism, you're getting the dual threat capabilities. You know, there's a possibility that, you know, maybe not put the word bust on him, but that he doesn't succeed, as well as other first round quarterbacks. But that the electricity and the playmaking and the athleticism is all there, so that maybe you take a little bit of a gamble on a guy who's, like I said, whose ceiling is a lot higher, but the risk is definitely there.
Yeah, I think really the first team up to take a quarterback or who's ready to take a quarterback would be the Panthers. Yeah. I don't know what DraftKings has on the odds. Do they have Kenny Pickett as the odds on favorite for them to be the pick?
Let me see. First quarterback selected. No, Malik Willis is the odds on favorite, -190. Kenny Pickett's number two at +170.
Okay, because see what they have for number six overall. Because I don't know. It's an interesting thing too with Pickett and Matt Rhule. Like he was recruited out of Temple there. But I mean, Matt Rhule is probably going to get fired no matter, unless they make the playoffs this year. So are you really going to entrust your season on the line with a rookie at quarterback with limited weapons on the offensive side of the ball and everything like that? I don't know. I think that's kind of hard to see that. And the owner is a little bit of a psychopath and just will do anything to win. That's why they signed Cam Newton to win, at the end of last season, and it didn't bring any wins there. But what I was going to say for the Panthers, I think you got to take, I'm looking at number six overall pick odds. I think they need some offensive line help. I think it's pretty much you throw a dart, you'll make a little profit on this, but if you just bet Neal, and Charles Cross, Evan Neal's +500 to go number six and Cross is +325. Give yourself two shots there at the tackles, assuming that the other guy from NC State's gone, you're going to make a little bit of a profit there.
Yeah, that's exactly what DraftKings has there at the number six draft pick. The top three guys are Ekwonu, Cross, and Neal, and then Kenny Pickett's the first non-tackle at +500, as the pick there for the Panthers.
Okay, that's pretty much all the props that I have. I was looking at some other stuff, but I don't know. The ones that I had, I like Jordan Davis at +2400. Thibodeau over 4.5. There has been I've seen this come up recently a little bit more that the Texans at number three could take Garrett Wilson. And those odds right before we recorded were +5,000. Now they've gone to 2,500.
Wow.
But I would find it hard to believe that they would take him third overall. I think he's fantastic. I think he's great, but I think they have more needs than that.
Oh no, agreed. I thought, you know, there's been a lot of talk about them maybe taking Kyle Hamilton. Now he's sliding and now he's being mentioned around with Washington, which if we're going to stay at 11 and take a guy, I want the shiny pick. I don't want the guy that you might need. You know what I mean? As much as we need secondary help, if we're going to take a defensive guy in the first round, you got to take N'Kobe Dean, in my opinion, just coming from a Washington standpoint. But, yeah, Kyle Hamilton, he's at plus 5,000 for the Texans, and Garrett Wilson, they have the same thing. I think I have him at plus 2,500 if he's sitting there.
All right, what about one last thing, the Falcons? Everybody pretty much assumes they're going to take a receiver. I'm looking at the odds for receiver here at the number 8 overall pick. Drake London, Garrett Wilson, and Jameson Williams all are plus 500, or Williams is plus 550. Again, it's kind of the thing with number 6. You put the same amount on all three of them, you're going to come away with a little bit of profit there.
Yeah.
If they're the same number. Now, if they take Olave, then you're screwed. But if you think they're going to take a receiver, why not just go on three, go with the three of them, knowing you're going to come away with something?
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, no, you disperse your money, pretty smart. Can't do that on DraftKings. Garrett Wilson's at plus 300. They have Jameson Williams at 350 and Drake London at 400. So, you know, if you could still do it if you split up your money, you know, in a the correct way. But yeah, it's obviously looks like they're going to be taking a wide receiver a year after taking a tight end at what? Six?
Number four.
Six, four. Which is brutal.
But they need to. They got nothing.
Oh, they have nobody. Their top wide receiver, Russell Gage, he went over to Tampa Bay. So yeah, I don't even know who they have. Cordero Patterson, is he still there? Is he playing, you know, the wide receiver position? So yeah, they definitely need wide receiver help. So I won't be shocked if they do take one there. Obviously, for my own personal reasons, I'm hoping it's Drake London. So that way we have our pick of Garrett Wilson or even Jameson Williams at 11. And obviously Olave will probably still be there as well.
I mean, their other receivers probably checking out these odds right now. He could be listening to the short thing, figuring out what he could wager on.
Yeah, true. Very, very
Would that
true.
Be against him wagering on the draft? It's not a game.
But yeah, I don't know.
The NFL?
But maybe change your DraftKings username so that way you're not busted.
We get a proxy guy.
Yeah.
I wish they had. Does DraftKings have guys that won't go in the first round or not?
Let me see.
Or just over under on their spot.
Yeah, they have just draft position. Let me see. I'm going to do some scrolling here.
Because Bavada has guys that go top 32 pick. I've been seeing a lot of stuff from a lot of people that this George Karlaftis from Purdue, this defensive end guy,
mm-hmm.
Everybody thought he was like in the first round, not in the first round. He's minus 1600 to go in the first, a top 32 pick. I want to know what his odds are not to be a top 32 pick. If it's minus 1600, that's what, plus 400, 500?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, no, they don't have, they just have top 32, and I'm looking and I don't see him listed on here. As being, oh yeah, there he is. Oh, okay, yeah, he's minus 1600. Okay, I just missed it there.
I mean, give me a not in the top 32. Come on, if you give me that good of odds, it's like a make cut, miss cut in golf. Give me something.
Yeah.
All right. So just to recap, this is what I'm going to be on. As I said, Thibodeau over 4.5 plus 120. Cowboys first pick as a receiver plus 350. The two tackles, Charles Cross and Evan Neal, to be the number 6. Overall pick, it is going to be number 6, Cross is plus 325, Neal's plus 500, and then at number 9, Jordan Davis to be the 9th overall pick. That is going to be plus 2400. That is what I'm going to be on for the draft on Thursday night.
So I was looking, just not to prolong this any longer, but they have exact team to draft Kenny Pickett. The Panthers are the favorite at plus 150. But then to draft Malik Willis, the Panthers are also the odds-on favorite there, plus 250. Obviously, the book just trying to protect themselves a little bit. Just kind of funny that. And then you have the Saints as the number 2 to draft Kenny Pickett at plus 200, but they're the 6th team to draft Malik Willis, which obviously I feel like that's kind of saying that they think Malik Willis will come off the board first if Carolina doesn't take Kenny Pickett to start, at the 6th pick. So it's just kind of funny how they – how they align themselves, the book, that is, to make sure that they back, you know, they obviously they're always protecting themselves, but, you know, so if you're trying to get a read on it, it's kind of tough there with trying to nail down exactly which quarterback is going to go where.
Yeah, no, that is. All right. I have one more. I'm just looking at this. Washington Commanders to take a wide receivers plus 120.
Take it.
You're getting plus money. I thought, I didn't even think about it and look at it because I figured it was going to be like minus 200, something like that. Plus 120, we're all in on that.
Yeah, let's do it.
So add that to the list. All right, anything else you want to touch on? Any baseball thing or not? Are we good?
Well, I mean...
The Goombas were out in full force Saturday afternoon.
Just absolute trash bags. I mean, yeah, that's tough. You know, what was it, a sweep or was it a 3-1?
No, it was a sweep. It was a sweep. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, and tough guy Miles Straw going after fans. I'm 100% okay with the chirping and the, you know, hey, tough guy Straw. Hey, Miles, you know, tough guy. I don't know if you saw the video.
I did.
I'm 100% okay with that. As soon as you start throwing shit on the field, you're immediately a trash bag. And all of those Yankee fans are trash bags for throwing shit on the field. Credit to Stanton Judge and all the other guys after celebrating going out there to right field to kind of quiet it down. You know, I think you have to do that if you're them, but, you know, not everybody always does what's right and, you know, credit to them. But yeah, anybody that was throwing shit on the field, you're a loser. You're an idiot. Nobody likes you. That's probably the most important thing you've done with your life in the last 10 years is go to that Yankee game and throw shit on the field. And you're probably telling all your friends, oh yeah, I threw a beer bottle. I threw the water bottle that hit the umpire. Like, yeah, that was terrible.
I watched on the video. It's not the greatest look for Miles Straw. Oh, yeah. But I don't really care about that. Someone in LA, they played the Angels last night and someone already has pictures of him climbing the fence and he autographed two of them and the guy was selling them, which was pretty funny. But I mean, it all started. They were cheering for Stephen Kwan when he got hurt.
Yes.
So that was all, that's what set everything off.
For sure.
And Mercado and Straw were having Kwan's back. And Straw did he did escalate it a little bit, but, it was pretty funny. They were talking to the players after. I found this funny. Mercado said he dodged out of the way of a full, like, beer can or whatever that whizzed by his face. That's not very funny. But the thing that made me laugh was that Trevor Stephan, who's having a very good season as in the back end of the bullpen so far. He said he got hit with an ice cream cone. And I thought that was like pretty, someone's wasting your,
yeah, I was gonna
like,
say,
why are you going to throw an ice cream cone? That's got to be like a $12 ice cream cone. First of all, are you throwing a beer? That's probably a $15 beer at Yankee Stadium, but you're going to throw an ice cream cone? Come on.
Of the list of things that I want to get hit with, like, I think I'd rather get hit with a beer than an ice cream cone.
I think I would too.
You know, like the beer's probably going to hurt a little bit more, but it's like, I got hit with a friggin' ice cream cone. Like,
it's pretty funny. Dude.
Exactly.
It's really funny. I thought it was funny. I was laughing at that. I thought it was pretty funny. All right. That's going to do it for us here. We'll be back next week. Thanks everybody for listening and we'll talk to you then.